right, it's 40 after. You know what that means. Time for Sailing with SailSport Talk and SailSportTalk.com. And we're joined now by Karen Lyle, who is back stateside, as we know from last week. Karen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Dominic. It's good to talk to you.
All right, so Karen, America's Cup has wrapped up. I have not been following it, but I know that you have. So give us a quick rundown on who won and what happens next.
Well, basically, the America's Cup has a trophy that has existed for more than 100 years. In fact, when it began, the New York Yacht Club had it for 132 years, which still is the longest standing continuous winning sports record in all sports. That's every sport. But Emirates Team New Zealand defended the cup. And what that means is that they won it last time, so they had it. And they were the challenger in this case was Ineos Britannia. And when they had the final match race, you know, it had gotten down to just basically Britain and New Zealand. New Zealand took the cup, won the cup, defended the cup. In fact, they did it with quite a number of wins, and Ineos Britannia only won two of the many different matches that they had. So New Zealand really took it with no question as to who was the winner.
And really quick, we have a couple of recorded interviews that you did. I do have one question, because listening to you and Rick talk, and I look at the show rundowns every week, is there a quote-unquote season for America's Cup, or is it kind of a year-round thing? Because it feels like we're always talking America's Cup in different portions of the year, and I just want to see if I'm losing my mind or if there is a strict season for it.
Well, there are. Every 4 years, America's Cup takes place, and whoever is the winner basically sets the rules. There's a challenger that comes up next. So if the next America's Cup, New Zealand is the defender, and there would be a challenger of record, and then other teams that come up to create it, and they create new boats for the America's Cup. It's both design and the match race. Now, the recording that we're going to hear is actually about the J-Class, the 2024 J-Class World Championship, which basically is featuring a classic boat that was in the 1930s, the eminent design. And this race actually happened in the middle of the modern America's Cup at Barcelona that I was just attending. And I interviewed the winner of the race, which was Svea, and also the secretary of the J-Class Association. And we're going to hear a little bit about the design of the boats in 1930.
All right, and with that, here is a little bit about the J-Class boats.
This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk, and we are in Barcelona, right in the middle of the America's Cup. But today we have a special race that is hosted by the Real Club Nautique de Barcelona. And I am with
Stuart Chudley. I'm the J-Class Secretary and also the race officer for this week.
The J-Class Association represents the boat owners internationally who have boats and own boats, or who are interested in acquiring boats in this particular class of boats, which is boats that have a similar characteristic. Can you tell us what unifies all of these?
Yes. So in the early 2000s, a group of owners got together looking to represent the interests and protect the history of the class. The J-Class, through the 30s, for 7-10 years, was very much involved in the America's Cup. It was very much leading technology side of things, as it was in those days. A number of owners, late 90s, early 20s, began to put plans together for renovation of one or two existing boats. Shortly after that, a class association was formed to represent the owners and also protect the interests of the class association and the history of the boats.
So, representing the owners, you are working with a lot of different people, not only racers, but also cruisers. Tell us a little bit about the variety. Just pick a few to give us the contrast.
Okay, so there's 9 boats in existence, of which you can imagine there's quite a diverse range of desires from the owners of what they do with the boats. So we've got 3-4 owners that are very, very keen to go racing these beautiful old boats. Boats are set up very differently when they're racing, and it takes a lot of effort time and money to have the boat fully optimised to go racing. Now, the loads on the boats are huge. On some of the winch loads can be sort of 30 tonnes or more. And the boats themselves vary from 165 to 180 tonnes. So, as you can imagine, there's big loads going through the boats. So we have to do things in a very safe way. And also manoeuvring a boat of that size, we have to make sure that we have the right conditions and set the scene in the right way to conduct races safely.
Excellent. I understand that it's possible for someone to be able to get the plans and be able to build something today. So it's not just preserving the old boats, but also taking something forward.
That's correct. There's two other boats, Endeavour and Valsheda, that were original. We have five replica boats which have been built to the original hull line drawings. That's very, very important that the boats are built to original drawings. And we also, as a class, we have some class rules that stipulate minimum and maximum dimensions, which creates, effectively, we've enveloped the current performance range of all the boats. So new boats coming in, yes, they will be built to original drawings, but they're not going to be able to build a boat with a whole load more sail area that goes a lot quicker than the existing fleet. We have to safeguard the existing fleet to ensure that the existing owners continue to enjoy their racing and new owners come in and, you know, enjoy it as well.
This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I'm here with
Paul Kelly,
and he's with Svea. I was fascinated by the history of this boat's design and that it took 80 years from the time it was designed to the time it was built in 2017. Can you tell us about that original design and why it took so long?
Yeah, so the boat was originally designed by Tor Holm, who was a Swedish yacht designer, most famous for designing 6 metres and 8 metres. He designed a J-class in 1937 for a Swedish challenge for the America's Cup. Along came World War II, so the plans got shelved and were actually lost. And they were found in Tor Holm's daughter's archive, which was in her attic at home, by a Dutch historian called John Lammerts van Buren, who was actually racing with us on Thursday. He found the plans 25 years ago this year. And the boat was then, the hull was built in 2012. The original builder for the hull decided not to continue with it. And then previous owner to the owners we have now built the boat in 2016, and we launched in 2017. So yeah, 80 years between design and realization. So yeah, it's great.
And tell us who the owners are.
So owners are a couple of Swedish tech guys, lovely guys with a strong background in racing. You know, this is the biggest boat they've ever had, you know, they've never sailed with crews this big, but they've just embraced it and they love it. And you know, when you put the results in, you know, they the smile gets bigger, you know, and it's the budget meetings are easier.
And also, you have a tremendous background in sailing and with America's Cup, and I know that you can say this a lot faster than I can. Can you give me your summary of your background?
Started off sailing when I was very young. Didn't do the traditional dinghy route. Did a bit of dinghy stuff, and then went into keelboat sailing when I was about 14. And it sort of spiraled out of control from there. Raced around the world once, took on the build of Svea in 2016. And so I've been with this is my ninth year with the project, and hoping to go for another 9 years.
Thank you so much for being on Sailsport Talk.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks very much, Karen.
All right, Dominic Jimenez and Karen Lyle here on Sailsport Talk and sailsporttalk.com. And Karen, I'm not as well traveled as Rick and you are, but one of my places that I want to go to is Spain. And while I have an affinity for the soccer club Real Madrid, obviously in Madrid, whose rival is Barcelona? I do want to travel to Barcelona. So what was... From now, I get to ask you, how was your trip to Barcelona? What were some of the things that you enjoyed doing?
Well, we had a host as accredited media, Turisme Barcelona, and they prepared several trips for media, but at the one that I'm talking about in this upcoming 3-minute sports travel spotlight is actually a perfect day that was planned, going to 3 locations. And I'm going to tell you about that in the spotlight. But I just really love the city of Barcelona, and actually I have ancestors who came from Barcelona in the 1850s, and so I have some blood calls there too. So it was really a wonderful experience for me to be in Barcelona, to enjoy the hospitality of the city, to go on the bus that goes all around the city and shows all of the different places that you can go and visit. I really want to go back and spend some time there just visiting and touring the city.
And with that, let's hear Karen's report on her trip to Barcelona.
This is Karen Lyle with a sports travel spotlight. I just returned from Barcelona as accredited media for the 37th Louis Vuitton America's Cup and the first ever Puig Women's America's Cup. One of the great things about being on location for a sports event is the awesome international cities you are traveling to. Turisme de Barcelona was one of our sponsors, and not only did they give accredited media free access to transportation, museums, and events of our choice, but Laura Aparicio organized a perfectly beautiful day in Barcelona. I want to share this day with you because it is a recipe for fun and inspiration that you can share with your family and friends on your next trip to Barcelona. We began the morning with a tour of the Casa Vicens Gaudí. This was a private home and Gaudi's first commission, hidden in the Gràcia district of the city, and added as a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2005. It was only recently renovated and opened to the public for tours. Here we toured from room to room, seeing a combination of influences from Islam, Japan, Africa, and Europe that made each room perfect for its purpose. Seeing the Japanese influence, I'm inspired to share a form of Japanese poetry called haiku that I wrote about my first experience visiting Casa Vicens. Evidence of life, Gaudi joining world motifs to make private joys. The next was a taxi ride and a tour of the Palau de la Música Catalana, also named a World Heritage Site by UNESCO. It is full of light, flower themes, and an impressive pipe organ. The building is vibrating with creativity and visual expressions of music in its architecture and stained glass windows. From its inauguration in 1908, the Palau de la Música, nestled right in the center of Ciutat Vella district, is home of its choirs, but also has been the center for politics and ideas. The floral patterns, light, and sculptures have been the backdrop for many a world premiere. I find the creativity of others to be a great inspiration for my own creativity, and this is my haiku that was inspired by the experience. Art, music, power, sings forth from walls of beauty, joining social life. We wound up the afternoon in the cellar of the Villa Vinteca, where Turisme de Barcelona booked a private wine and gourmet fish and cheese tasting for the 8 of us. My delight at the flavors, textures, and experience inspired my third haiku in this trilogy. Cheese, fish, and friendship, wonder of life in 3 wines, bursts pleasure on the tongue. I have included this poetry trilogy as well as itinerary, photos, and a menu on our website at thesalesporttalk.com. I hope you will enjoy this experience as much as I did on your next visit to Barcelona. This is Karen Lyle from salesporttalk.com. Thanks to BarcelonaTurisme.com for a perfect day in Barcelona.